Uranium supplied by Russia to the EU, and it's another almost 20% supplied by Kazakhstan, and production of uranium in Kazakhstan is basically under control of Russia. So it's close to half of uranium that used in Europe today coming from Russia. But the most important thing to understand that it's still possible to do something with this dependence, and why we should do something about this dependence. For one very simple reason: as long as United States and European Union continue to pay Vladimir Putin for uranium or fossil fuel, that means that this money will be used for the war in Ukraine. That means more people will die in Ukraine because U.S. and the EU cannot stop it.
We have to leave it there, but I want to thank you so much for being with
Welcome.
Us. Vladimir Slivyak, co-chair of the leading Russian environmental organization, Ecodefense. That does it for our show. The UN Climate Summit is expected to go through the weekend. We'll be reporting more on it on Monday. A very happy belated birthday to our digital editor, Ishmael Darrow. Special thanks to our UK and Cairo-based AP team here for a great week at Democracy Now! At COP27. And Democracy Now! Co-host Juan Gonzalez will be giving a speech today at the Columbia School of Journalism, reflecting on his 40 years of fighting for racial and social justice in journalism. Check out our website at democracynow.org. Special thanks to our team here and in New York. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
And you are listening to... This is KBOO Portland, time for your 5 o'clock news.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, Portland moves forward with the highly controversial houselessness plan.
Attorney General Merrick Garland appoints a special prosecutor to investigate Donald Trump.
And in international news, the Gates Foundation pledges $7 billion in aid to Africa.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Friday, November 18th. 2022. I'm Annette Newell.
And I'm Michelle Coppola. The Portland City Council is proceeding with a $27 million plan that bans street camping and which could force people into city-run encampments. The effort involves building at least 6 campsites while moving toward a camping ban sometime in the next year and a half. The plan, which remains highly controversial, was crafted by Mayor Ted Wheeler and Commissioner Dan Ryan and was approved by the City Council on November 3rd. Opponents see the plan as criminalizing houselessness, while supporters think it will connect people with the social services they need. Yesterday's budget proposal withholds $7 million from the regional agency charged with addressing houselessness unless Multnomah County commits to spending $30 million on eviction prevention, rental assistance, and legal defense funds. That agency, the Joint Office of Homeless Services, is overseen and funded by both city and county governments. Its charge includes housing, shelter, health care, employment assistance, and case management services. $7 million is only a small fraction of the agency's $255.5 million budget. But this move may be a means to force county leaders to help fund Wheeler's and Ryan's plan, which pushes people into city-sanctioned campsites.
And some key details of Wheeler's plan remain unknown. For example, the city has not said where it will build mass campsites that would each shelter up to 250 people. In addition to support from the Multnomah County Board of Commissioners, the plan requires buy-in from several local agencies, including the Multnomah County District Attorney's Office, the Metro Regional Government, and state leaders. They have not yet committed their support. Wheeler did say Governor-elect Tina Kotek and Multnomah County Chair-elect Jessica Vega Peterson are in favor of the proposal. Larger parts of yesterday's spending package include $17 million to build and operate three camps for a year and $5.5 million toward increased staffing. The latter includes establishing a 50-person navigation team to connect people with houseless services, as well as funding two private security guards. Commissioner Joanne Hardesty was the only council member to vote no on the spending package. She was apparently alarmed about the last-minute addition of hiring private security. About 60 people testified at yesterday's meeting. Most criticized the proposal, and some compared the planned government-run camps to World War II concentration camps. Wheeler asked testifiers to limit their comments to policy decisions before the council and not personal attacks. When another testifier exceeded their speaking time, the commissioners excused themselves and reconvened remotely. Wheeler said, quote, "The success of this work hinges on federal, regional, state, and local partners coming to the table with their ideas, services, and resources. It's going to take commitment from all of us to do the hard work that lies ahead," end of quote. Yesterday's changes were part of the city's regular fall budgetary adjustments, and they'll get a final council vote next week.
Attorney General Merrick Garland appointed a special counsel today aimed at taking over two major criminal investigations involving former President Donald Trump. These include his role in events leading up to the January 6th Capitol insurrection and his handling of sensitive government documents. John L. Smith, the former head of the Justice Department's Public Integrity Section, will now oversee those investigations. Garland's announcement came after Trump said on Tuesday that he plans to run for president again. Some experts have claimed Trump's run is intended to make it more difficult for prosecutors to pursue criminal charges against him. The appointment of a special counsel may actually protect the Justice Department and the investigations. While special counsels can be fired from their positions, the process is much more difficult than is simply removing an ordinary prosecutor from a case. Special counsels are semi-independent prosecutors appointed for high-level investigations when there is potential conflict of interest or the appearance of one. They have greater day-to-day autonomy versus regular United States attorneys, but are still subject to the Attorney General's control. Trump already faced a special counsel investigation led by Robert Mueller, who scrutinized the nature of various links between Trump's 2016 presidential campaign and Russia. Trump supporters have already accused President Biden's Justice Department of investigating Trump solely for political reasons. Some Republicans have even floated the idea of impeaching Garland if he pursues charges against the ex-president. That possibility might be more realistic now that the GOP has won control of the House.
And the Biden administration declared yesterday that the Saudi Arabian crown prince should be granted immunity from a lawsuit over his role in the killing of a U.S.-based journalist. This is a clear turnaround from Joe Biden's campaign speech denunciations of the prince. Saudi officials killed Jamal Khashoggi at the Saudi consulate in Istanbul in 2018. They're believed to have dismembered him, though his remains have never been found. The United States intelligence community determined that Saudi Arabia's crown prince had approved the killing of the journalist who criticized Prince Mohammed bin Salman's harsh means of dealing with rivals and critics. The Biden administration now says the senior positions of the crown prince as Saudi Arabia's de facto ruler and now prime minister shield him. The lawsuit is being brought by Khashoggi's fiancé and by the rights group that he founded, Democracy for the Arab World Now. The request is non-binding, but it is already angering human rights activists and many U.S. lawmakers. They feel Saudi Arabia has stepped up imprisonment efforts, as well as other retaliation against critics at home and abroad. Saudi Arabia has also cut oil production, a move seen by some as undercutting efforts by the U.S. and its allies to sanction Russia for its war against Ukraine. The State Department called the administration's decision, quote, purely a legal determination, end of quote. It cited what it claims is long-standing precedent.
Sovereign immunity, by the way, is a concept that's rooted in international law. It holds that states and their officials are protected from some legal proceedings in foreign states' domestic courts. Despite its recommendation for immunity, the U.S. government said in its filing late yesterday that it takes no view on the merits of the present suit. The U.S. has also reiterated its condemnation of the journalist's murder. In calling out Saudi Arabia's behavior, however, the government's statement did not mention the Crown Prince's alleged role. As a presidential candidate, Biden vowed to make a pariah out of the Saudi ruler over the 2018 killing. In a 2019 town hall meeting, Biden said, quote, "I think it was a flat-out murder, and I think we should have nailed it as that. I publicly said at the time, we should treat it that way, and there should be consequences relating to how we deal with that power," end of quote. However, as President, Biden has sought to ease tensions with Saudi Arabia, hoping to persuade the country to stop cutting oil production. He was seen bumping fists with Prince Mohammed on a recent trip to the kingdom. The federal court lawsuit names the Crown Prince, his top aides, and others. Saudi Arabia says the prince had no direct role in that slaying. Human rights advocates now argue that the Biden administration's decision could embolden Prince Mohammed and other authoritarian leaders around the world to commit more human rights abuses.
Bellingham residents protest a city council vote against an immigrant resource center. Eric Tegedoff has more on the story.
People rallied outside of Bellingham City Hall on Thursday to show support for a city-funded immigrant resource center. It's a response to a city council vote of 4-3 earlier this week against including the center in the city's budget for the next 2 years. Council members did vote in favor of hiring a facilitator to collect more data and create plans for a center in the future. Sophia Ray is a high school student and member of the city's Immigrant Advisory Board, which has been developing plans for the center. She feels the advisory board is being ignored.
The messaging we're getting is that our stories and our lived experiences don't count as data or as reasonable claims to actually create this center.
Ray says rallygoers delivered a petition with more than 1,000 signatures in support of the Immigrant Resource Center to the mayor's office on Thursday. Omera Jose, who spoke at the rally, says some people who come to the community don't speak English as a first language and face a communication barrier for such routine tasks as getting identification. A resource center could provide assistance. He also says it could serve as an important hub in a crisis, such as a flood.
When times of emergency, I think people, the first call is that resource center, where can I get help? People also can reach to that center to say, how can I help?
Ray says folks are committed to the center, and she's proud of the people who came out to the rally.
Their support in our continued fight is proof that this sort of systemic change is possible, and everybody's voice, immigrants, whether they know the language or don't know the language, or even young folks like myself, high schoolers, we deserve a seat at the table.
For Washington News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
Nancy Pelosi steps down as a major Democratic leader. A denier disputes the Arizona gubernatorial election, and the Republicans pledge to investigate Joe Biden. With these stories and more, it's Catherine Carley with 2022 Talks.
Welcome to 2022 Talks, where we are following our democracy in historic times.
For me, the hour has come for a new generation to lead the Democratic caucus that I so deeply respect. And I'm grateful that so many are ready and willing to shoulder this awesome responsibility.
After 2 decades as Democratic leader of the House, Nancy Pelosi says she will step down from her role as Speaker, but continue to represent her San Francisco district in Congress. Her announcement comes after Republicans won control of the House in the midterm elections, which Pelosi says saw Americans voting in defense of liberty and the rule of law.
With these elections, the people stood in the breach and repelled the assault on democracy. They resoundingly rejected violence and insurrection, and in doing so, gave proof through the night that our flag was still there.
Representative Hakeem Jeffries of New York is reportedly next in line for House Minority Leader. He's the current chair of the House Democratic Caucus and would be the first Black person to lead a party in Congress. Catherine Clark of Massachusetts and Pete Aguilar of California were also expected to vie for top positions in the party. Katie Hobbs was declared the winner in the race for Arizona governor, but for Republican candidate Carrie Lake, the race isn't over yet.
When we called for Katie Hobbs to recuse herself over a year ago, they ridiculed us. It turns out we were right. The fox was guarding the hen house, and because of that, voters have been disenfranchised.
Lake has not provided evidence of voter fraud, but says she is busy collecting data from last week's midterm elections. Hobbs, Arizona's current Secretary of State, was declared the winner by more than 17,000 votes.
Committee Republicans have spoken with multiple whistleblowers from numerous schemes involving the Biden family, reviewed Hunter Biden's laptop, and received documents of previously unknown transactions.
New House Oversight Committee Chair Republican James Comer of Kentucky wasted no time in announcing plans to investigate President Joe Biden and his family's business dealings worldwide. Comer called investigations into the family a top priority for the Republican Congress. Puerto Rico's governor testified before a congressional committee on the future of the island's power grid following a series of natural disasters. But Congresswoman Jennifer Gonzalez-Colon says until Puerto Rico is granted full statehood, the will of the Puerto Rican people is diminished.
The U.S. Congress can do whatever they want with territories. They can do whatever they want with the issue of Puerto Rico. And yet, we're still facing a lot of the needs. Like states of Louisiana, New Jersey, Florida, Texas, that were hit by hurricanes as well.
The island has been receiving power from electric generators on government-run barges off the island. I'm Catherine Carley for Pacifica Network and Public News Service.
You are listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for Counterspin, an in-depth look at the news produced by the Media Watch Group FAIR. At 6, it's Rising Up with Sonali. At 7, it's Civic Cipher. Tonight's weather promises clear skies with lows around 34. Tomorrow's weather, mostly sunny, a high around 49. Today in history, Susan B. Anthony and 14 other women were arrested for voting illegally in the United States 1872 presidential election. Our quote of the day is from Miss Anthony, who said, "Trust me that as I ignore all law to help the slave, so I will ignore it to protect an enslaved woman."
The Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation has just announced it is committing $7 billion to Africa over the next 4 years. Per Bill Gates, this comes as a result of the Ukrainian crisis reducing aid promised to that continent. The foundation's pledge, which is 40% greater than the amount spent during the previous 4 years, targets hunger, disease, poverty, and gender inequality. Nigeria, Africa's most highly populated country, will get the biggest share. Significant funding has recently been diverted towards Ukraine, and Russia's invasion has increased prices of a number of commodities globally, adversely impacting aid operations. Gates said, quote, "European budgets are deeply affected by the Ukraine war, and so right now the trend for aid is not to go up," end quote. End quote. The help is desperately needed there. Kenya and East Africa are suffering their worst drought in 40 years. The drought, compounded by wars and the COVID-19 pandemic, has led to a hunger crisis for more than 10 million people in the region. The foundation gave $6.7 billion in charitable support in 2021. Last week, it pledged $1.4 billion to help the world's small stakeholder farmers deal with climate change.
Some colleges are being criticized over their treatment of animals in university research labs. Mike Moen tells us more from the Wisconsin News Connection.
The University of Wisconsin won a recent legal battle tied to accusations of animal abuse within its research facilities. Activists hope that doesn't end the conversation or the scrutiny. The case had to do with the university restricting social media comments critical of certain conditions. Those comments were posted by Maddie Cranzo, who graduated from UW in 2013 and is now an animal rights advocate. Her lawsuit was dismissed, but Cranzo feels what she witnessed while working in the school's facilities as a student is commonplace across the U.S. She says neither school administrators nor those enforcing standards are willing to act meaningfully.
The people who are making the decisions are not considering truly the needs of these animals, and that would have to change.
Granzo's primary role was an animal caretaker, saying she witnessed deplorable and traumatizing conditions for primates. In recent years, UW was cited by the USDA for violations of the Animal Welfare Act. The school did not respond to a request for comment, but in a statement from 2020, it said similar accusations by the group People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals were misleading and that it takes animal care seriously. Rick Bogle, a volunteer with the group Alliance for Animals, agrees the University of Wisconsin's situation isn't unique. He feels federal officials can do their part by improving their inspection protocols when assessing these labs.
Most of them are inspected annually, and annually appears not enough. Sometimes these visits are just a few hours or, you know, less than a day. And a place like the University of Wisconsin, there's labs all over campus.
Federal officials also did not respond to a request for comment. Meanwhile, Cranzo says universities need to take into account the emotional impact on the people who perform daily tasks in their research facilities.
There should be a non-affiliated psychologist or therapist with these institutions that have to check in on workers, especially student workers.
Mike Moen, Wisconsin News Connection.
Citizens in Nevada have gathered to discuss a proposed national monument there. It may reduce carbon pollution. Suzanne Potter tells us more.
The proposed national monument, to be called Aviquemé, is getting a big boost as top leaders of the Bureau of Land Management hold a public meeting in Laughlin. BLM Director Tracy Stone Manning will hear from a range of stakeholders on the 450,000-acre proposed monument near Searchlight. Taylor Patterson with the Native Voters Alliance of Nevada says the area is the center of the creation story for many human-speaking tribes.
It's the place where all of their traditional stories and knowledge comes from. And then for our Southern Paiute tribes in the area, it's also a part of the Salt Song Trail. And so that tells really the life cycle of Paiute people and how they moved through the land and all the important places, plants, and animals in the area.
Aviquemé is the Mojave name for Spirit Mountain. The area is also important habitat for mule deer and bighorn sheep. There has been no organized opposition to the project. However, Grace Palermo with Friends of Nevada Wilderness says past proposals to build a wind farm in the area galvanized efforts to protect the land.
The idea that huge wind turbines could go up in this area could really damage habitat for wildlife and the viewshed, then possibly create access issues for folks who are out on these lands.
Louis Bubala with the Nevada Outdoor Business Coalition says a monument designation would get more people excited about visiting the area, adding to the state's $4 billion outdoor economy.
If we get a new national monument, you're going to have people exploring the land and visiting Searchlight, Laughlin, Boulder City. Henderson is a launching spot to get out there.
Craig Bakerjian is director of the Nevada Conservation League's Aviquemé Coalition. He says the monument will further state and federal goals to preserve 30% of the land by 2030 and reduce carbon pollution to boot.
Climate change is a very real threat. And part of the way that we can mitigate that is with undisturbed natural resources, which act as natural carbon sinks.
Congresswoman Dina Titus filed a bill in February to create a new national monument, but President Joe Biden has the power under the Antiquities Act to make the designation on his own. For Nevada News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
For years, both Native tribes and environmental groups have demanded the decommissioning of PacifiCorps's Klamath Dams. Now it is about to happen. With that story and more, here's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The Federal Energy Regulatory Commission has approved decommissioning of PacifiCorps Klamath Dams in Northern California. It comes after years of demands from tribes and environmental groups. Christina Onnestad reports.
The largest dam demolition and river restoration plan in the world is closer to becoming reality. U.S. regulators approved the removal of the PacifiCorps' four aging Klamath Dam structures. It will reopen hundreds of miles of California River to imperiled salmon. Richard Glick is chair of FERC, the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission.
The dam removals make sense in large part as it relates to fish and wildlife protection. I think also there's a discussion in the order regarding the impact on tribes and the ability for tribes to be able to essentially have their practices and traditions improved. as it relates to water quality issues, fisheries, and other resources. I think it's a very important issue.
Decommissioning the Klamath Dam will also return the lower half of California's second largest river to a free-flowing state for the first time in more than a century. Preparations will begin in 2023, with decommissioning by 2024. I'm Christina Onnested for National Native News in California.
The Navajo Nation Council has chosen a new speaker. As Arizona Public Radio's Ryan Heinches reports, it follows the resignation of the former legislative leader just days before the November election.
Delegates elected Otto So as speaker during a special session in the tribal capital of Window Rock. He'll lead the 24th Navajo Nation Council in its final days before the next one is seated in January. Navajo Chief Justice Joanne Jane administered the oath of office in council chambers Wednesday, and so pledged to continue providing vital services to the tribe and to create a smooth transition into the next council. He'll head all departments and programs in the Navajo Nation's legislative branch. So represents Tuba City, the reservation's largest community, and has served on multiple committees, including as vice chair of the Law and Order Committee. It comes after Seth Damon's resignation as speaker earlier this month. In October, he was photographed slumped over and appearing inebriated in front of a gambling machine in Las Vegas while on a family trip. He later admitted to being intoxicated and resigned as speaker as the council considered legislation, sponsored by So, to put him on indefinite leave. So will serve until January 10, 2023, when the next council begins and delegates will again elect a speaker. For National Native News, I'm Ryan Heinches in Flagstaff, Arizona.
Longtime South Dakota water protector and pipeline opponent Joy Braun has passed away. South Dakota Public Broadcasting's C.J. Keene has more.
Braun, a citizen of the Cheyenne River Sioux Nation, passed away in her home at the age of 53. Braun was an organizer for the Indigenous Environmental Network. A statement from the organization says Braun was a proud servant for her people. She was a nonviolent, direct action organizer who trained hundreds of people over the years. Her work, including organizing a protest against the Keystone XL pipeline near Cannonball, North Dakota in 2016. Friend of Braun and fellow activist Madonna Thunderhawk says Braun was an authority outside the public eye.
She kept track of behind the scenes what the different corporations were doing, what the legislative issues are, and those types of things that had to do with public utilities, those kinds of legislative updates. She kept up with that. She did the research, and she stayed current, and she kept the rest of us in the know. She made her place in the protection of our world as Indigenous people of this land.
Funeral arrangements for Braun have not yet been announced. I'm C.J. Keene.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
A hurricane is motivating a Texas citizen to protect the environment. Dr. Anthony Lizowitz has more on the story with Climate Connections.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. During Hurricane Harvey in 2017, Antonia Nicates watched in horror as floodwater began to rise in her Texas home.
My kids were upstairs, and I start seeing the water coming in, and it was like, how will I get my kids out of here?
The family quickly moved a few cherished items to the second floor and packed overnight bags.
I just came out in the middle of that dirty, toxic water, and I just started screaming and asking for help. And that's when I heard the rescue boat coming.
Her family evacuated safely and eventually rebuilt their home.
But something happened inside me after this extreme weather event that changed me forever.
She says it motivated her to take action on climate change and help protect Latino communities who are among the most vulnerable to extreme weather. Today, Cades works as Managing Director for Latino Engagement at Climate Power, a campaign to increase people's awareness about climate change and push for policy solutions.
I feel really, really proud of what I do, and I feel a deep sense of purpose.
Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To hear more stories like this, visit climateconnections.org.
You are listening to the KBOO Evening News for Friday, November 18th, 2022. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips, 971-245-2158. The producer for tonight's newscast is Josh Salem, and our engineer is Althea Billings. Great job, Josh and Althea. Thank you. Special thanks also to Eric Tegadoff, Catherine Carley, Mike Moen, Suzanne Potter, Antonia Gonzalez, and Dr. Anthony Leisowitz. The director of Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K2A2 BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220 HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Annette Newell.
And I'm Michelle Coppola. All of our KBOO programs, including the Evening News, are supported by our members, great people like you. If you'd like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for Counterspin. Have a great night.
Welcome to Counterspin, your weekly look behind the headlines. I'm Janine Jackson. This week on Counterspin, ABC World News Tonight told viewers what it thought they needed to know. Bolsonaro loses Brazilian election. Leftist former president wins by narrow margin. The victor of Brazil's consequential presidential race has an actual name. It's not leftist former president, or former shoeshine boy, as the New York Times had it, or even savior, as CNN suggested supporters view him. He's a person, Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva, known as Lula, a popularly supported former president whose program had and has more to do with helping poor people in Brazil than with securing the kind of extractive, profit-overall, devil-take-the-hindmost international relationships that elite U.S. media applaud. So just get ready, is all we're saying. For a Latin American president taking steps to protect the human life-supporting Amazon, for example, to be presented in the press as a flawed, corrupt self-server who, really, if you're a serious person, suggests that uplifting the poor and saving humanity might